Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up? What's up?
Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I'm Derek. He's Zach. You know it by now.
Happy Tuesday. It's hot out. Sun's out. Players are returning to Bills practice, namely Dalton Kincaid. Looks to have missed one day with some knee soreness. Back on the field in full pads as Bills get underway at St. John Fisher for, I believe, day number six.
You love to see it.
There we go. We'll listen back to Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady, who spoke earlier this morning. We'll listen back to that in about hour number two. We'll also hear from Sal Capaccio a little bit later on in this hour. Yeah, camp is underway. We've got two more days until we have a football game with the Hall of Fame game.
My favorite thing to annoy Joe Cali with now, by the way.
Josh,
you watching the Hall of Fame game?
Yeah, no.
Do
no.
it.
The hardest
no.
head shake.
Do it.
No.
Do it just to annoy Joe Cali. Come on. It's fun to mess with your friends.
No.
Come on.
Here's my thing, though, with the Hall of Fame
game. Well, now
game,
I'm texting honestly. You at 8 o'clock on Thursday night saying, are you watching the Hall of Fame game? Because this is lit.
Here's my thing, though, honestly, with the Hall of Fame game. I will watch it initially.
Yes. Like, you are the perfect middle ground.
I will get home around when kickoff is because everything says it starts at 8. It starts at about 8:10, 8:15.
Right.
That's about as long as it takes me to get home.
Exactly.
And I'll have it on. And I'll watch the first two drives. And then I will look at my girlfriend or my family or whoever I'm watching with and go, do you want to watch a movie?
You're going to look at this and
remember.
And
then we will turn on a movie.
You will remember, oh, these are exclusively third and fourth stringers playing in this game.
Well, because and that's the thing, too.
I've made a mistake.
You very rarely in that game end up getting like the really fun rookie to watch. Rookie quarterback.
Right.
Or you know, Travis Hunter could be one of those guys. No, it's the Lions and the Chargers. And like, sure, I like Amarian Hampton.
Am I going to watch
a full game of what you – like even what you said, we're eventually going to get to third and fourth stringers playing. No.
Yes. And ready? You are the perfect reaction of a football fan watching the Hall of Fame game. Josh shaking his head vehemently, that's the wrong way to do it. Me?
You got to turn it on at least a
watching
bit.
It until there's the inevitable power outage in the third quarter is also the wrong way to do it.
Yes. Okay. At least you understand that.
I know I have a problem, but it's fun. At least for me.
My friends and I
just made it a tradition at this point. We watched that game after getting back to our hotel room in Indianapolis, and we just, like, that's the night. Yeah,
we throw it on
and laugh at terrible players making terrible plays.
It's just, for me.
Is it mean? Yes.
Yeah, but.
Like, do I have fun with it, though? Absolutely.
But every year, it's the same thing of like, ooh, like, football's back. It's the first game in months. Like, we're all going to, most of us will get excited to turn it on and have the exact same reaction after two series and go, this was a mistake.
Yes.
I could have gone out to dinner tonight. I could have thrown on the movie me and my wife have been talking about watching.
You could do so many things.
You could do both. You can go out to dinner and be watching the Hall of Fame game in the background.
I see. Well, actually, yeah, because it probably will be on.
It'll be on.
If you go
it's
to
on
like,
NBC.
It'll be on, likely.
I cannot ever get there with it. And I used to, when I was much younger, too, it was sort of the same thing like the Pro Bowl. Like, I would get excited for it, and like I'd sit down and watch it. But it was always that game, no matter how young I was, where eventually I was just like,
the difference
who are
between,
these people?
The difference between you and me there is when I was young, the Pro Bowl, they actually played football.
That's right. That's right.
So that is probably where its difference lies. But I just need you to do me one favor. Text Joe Cali on Thursday night.
I'll text him that I turned it off.
But that you watched it, though.
Well, I always plan on watching it. I do not get further than two series. I don't make it out of the first quarter.
Yeah. It's become my bit at this point over the last 3 weeks, and I love it. Because I learned how much it annoys him. And every week, Joe Cali says something on the Saturday show that like makes me question reality itself.
Yep.
So
maybe blue jerseys.
Is my one form of vengeance. Because that's what friends do.
Yeah, that is nice. It is weird, though, the Hall of Fame game. It does start earlier than like everything.
Yes.
Like college football, they're starting to get into their like kind of summer workouts and everything like that. But the first game isn't until August 23rd, and that's going to be in Dublin for week zero. Like
right.
The Hall of Fame game is very weirdly placed. I know why it's there because we have the Hall of Fame ceremonies and stuff. I understand that. It's just very weird
they
where it is placed.
They don't do enough for the amenities of that place. I really think they just need it. But put more. If you're going to host an NFL game there every year, and it is an NFL game.
It is.
It is recorded within history. It is an NFL game. Its stats are recorded, everything. If you're going to play an NFL game there every day or every year, update the facility.
I wonder if that's part of the mystique, though, that it is like effectively a high school stadium. That, like, we're not going to touch it. We use it once a year. No one really watches it. We just get everyone on the field. It's Canton. Like, that's got its own mystique to it. I haven't been to Canton in years. I actually do want to go back because it's been a long time since I've been there. But I think that's part of the appeal to it is that it is a high school stadium hosting an NFL game for one time. That's it. And then it goes away for a year.
Yeah.
I also wouldn't be against if it went away forever and we just had the Hall of Fame like ceremonies. I've thought about that for a few years. I'm like, who would honestly be upset if the Hall of Fame game just disappeared?
All right.
Gone.
I don't need to do this for a third week in a row. We can move on from the Hall of Fame game just for the sake of everyone's ears.
But is that because you're going to say that you would be upset if it went away?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I would start putting up a staunch defense here, and I don't need to do that again.
803-0550, the number two call. We're also, of course, covering training camp from St. John Fisher. And it is brought to you by Figo Car and Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor when you need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Buy Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. So, yes, as we did mention, guys like Dalton Kincaid are back on the field. He misses just one day of camp with knee soreness. He's back on the field, full pads. Does not look like he's working off to the side either. Elijah Moore and Tyrell Shavers appear to be. But on the offensive side of the ball, and I do kind of want to keep up with this for a lot of today because I think it's interesting. And this came from Air Raid over on Twitter, and he was talking about Keon Coleman and looking at maybe what his stats could be for year two. And Coleman has been sort of a difficult guy to piece down of, like, really what would be a good year two for him. We all know what a great season would be, right? Over 1,000 yards, double-digit touchdowns. He leads the team in targets and receptions. I mean, it completely explodes, right? We all know what a great year looks like.
Yeah.
But what is a year where you can walk away going, yeah, that was a good pick. And I'm happy with where his development is, and you're going into year three pretty confident. Because this year, this offseason, has been kind of up and down of like how people have really felt about him.
What is the line that says, write it down in Sharpie?
Mm-hmm.
Lock it in.
Yeah. And so Air Raid put it up on Twitter, and he said, if you combine Keon Coleman and Matt Collins' 2024 production, you'd get 60 catches, 934 yards, 15.6 yards per catch, and 9 touchdowns. And to be fair, I look at that stat line.
Adds in that it should be the goal for Coleman in year two, logging a ton of snaps and get after it in the run game, make timely catches, be the red zone threat. And there's a lot of logic to it as well. Credit to Air Raid on this because you think about it. Josh Palmer's brought in to take a good amount of the snap share from Matt Collins and Amari Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
When Cooper arrived, he played a lot. That's what happened.
Yep.
He just didn't get the ball a lot more than we would have all liked for him to. But someone's got to take the rest of those snaps. Palmer's going to take a chunk of those from the two players combined. That took a lot of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a leftover. Who do you think takes it? Like, obviously, Elijah Moore is going to get his, but Keon Coleman should be adding to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he could take... I would doubt that you get all the production. Like, you can't just fuse the two of them together, for example, when it comes to the stat lines, because Palmer exists and Moore exists, and all of them have experience playing on the outside as well, so they'll probably rotate in and out and everywhere on the offense. But if I hear the word 900 in terms of Keon Coleman's stat line, I'm hammering it in. Because that's a good year for an offense whose philosophy is worn on the offensive coordinator's hat or his shirt.
Right.
There's a more than 0% chance that Joe Brady gets an Everybody Eats tattoo sometime in his life.
Could see it happening. Absolutely. He seems to very much love that.
He loves the idea of it. And it even dates back to LSU. He also had elite receivers that you needed to get the football, so everyone should eat.
Mm-hmm.
But the philosophy's still there, even dating back. He likes to distribute. He likes to have balance so that defenses have to keep guessing. And that is something that I really love about the offensive philosophy. And if I get a player with 900 yards in that offensive philosophy with a roster of capable receivers, I take it.
It is funny, though, looking at that stat line. If that truly was his stat line, comparing it to last year's Bills receiver room, it's like blowing everyone out of the water, like outside of receptions. Shakir would still beat him. Shakir had 76 last year. If he had 60, he'd be, I think, second on the team. Yards, blows him out of the water. He'd have more touchdowns. He would have four more touchdowns than the next closest, Matt Collins. But, of course, we're combining their stats. I get it. But it's just it is – I look at that stat line, though, and this is where I've brought up, I don't really know if we're going to get exactly what we did last year, just a little bit more improved. I don't really know if the Bills want to throw under 520 passes a season with Josh Allen at quarterback. Yes, you've liked running the football and it's worked, but your best weapon is still Josh Allen. It is still him spreading the ball around and moving the ball through the air.
You do need, though, to in order to be the most efficient on offense, and Brady mentioned that yesterday when he talked with Jeremy and Joe, of, you know, the efficiency. You want to keep humming.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Incorporating balance. And the Bills have the offensive line to allow for that balance. They have the roster for that balance. Yes, Josh Allen is the MVP. Why did he get it last year, though? Not just because of narrative base, but it also is because the run game was effective enough that you could not assume that they're throwing the football 520 times in a season.
Right.
It's not something that you can assume at that point. The run game then is an effective counterpunch to where, oh, do we really have to drop? But it's also, there's no way we're dropping the safety into the box. Josh Allen will kill us over the top. We still have to play the two high. There is a bit of a defending Josh Allen means that maybe less is more. Can you be more efficient? Still deadly, but more efficient.
And so,
I think Brady has figured out that puzzle.
When I look, though, at that stat line, that probably tells me he's becoming pretty efficient. That's where Keon was not great at all last year.
The efficiency needs to be better.
But it's the efficiency for in terms of catch percentages. He was at 50-50. In terms of successful pass rate, he was well below everyone else. I think at around 43% last year.
44% if you round it up, yes.
So that's where I see the stat line, and I'm like, okay, well, that bumped up. Shakir is already, I mean, to most Bills fans, one of their better slot receivers they've ever had, and they just recently had Cole Beasley, and this is after 1 year of really going. He's been awesome in that role. Then you add in Josh Palmer, and his separation analytics really point to he should be a favorite target for Allen, let alone what we've heard from the Bills GM and Brandon Bean. He's talked a lot about him. Joe Brady's talked about him, and then Allen and him, they've started connecting more and more as practice has gone on. Just looking at those three, you can feel pretty good about it. Then if Kincaid can kind of get back to what he was in his rookie year, and all of a sudden, you know, Samuel, if he's healthy and kind of can do what he was doing at the end of the year, it does point to it's a much more efficient passing game. It doesn't have to be Allen willing the team at times to wins. You know, Mac Collins leading the team in touchdowns.
Right.
And having less than 400 yards receiving, it can be both a more balanced attack, but also a more explosive attack. I think that might be the most frustrating thing with their passing attack. It did not feel explosive. There were games they absolutely won throwing the ball. Detroit and LA, they didn't win.
It was about that E word, efficiency.
But yeah, they were not efficient and they were not particularly explosive. Keon has a few moments, but there was very rarely a feeling with that team that they could go into a game and throw the ball 50 times and it would work. Last year was a struggle with that.
I don't think they want to.
I don't think they want to.
They want to be efficient. They want to keep humming. They want to be consistent. I think that's Brady's ultimate goal. And yeah, is it a little blasphemous to say that when you have Josh Allen as a quarterback? Yes, but I think part of the success has to do with you're going to limit him doing too much. You're going to limit the chaos gremlin that lives in the back of Allen's head that now less and less over time shows its face. But what was the line? Sugar high, Josh. You don't see it anymore.
No, that's right.
Not under Brady.
That's right.
And that's because there is balance and efficiency to this offense. there is something to, you do not have to feed one specific target. You don't have to carry the team on your back. We have the balance that we can get things going. If there's a little bit of a log jam with the passing game, you can go ahead and get Cook, Davis, Johnson, whoever's working that day to run the football for you.
But now they do have a two-year sample size on film of, hey, they like to run the football and they do it well. That's where I think they maybe are set up better this year to throw the ball, because James Cook is a threat. You do have a better run game that you can lean on, that now all of a sudden, I mean, that's look at Baltimore. Like, they were
You're thinking the count of the counter.
Yeah. Now you've built this in for 2 years. The run game has been working. Now you can kind of go back to the passing game with the Bills. They have better personnel. I think that is absolutely true from last year. They have better personnel, and you can start to work that back in. It doesn't have to – I think my frustration is – it doesn't have to be a season for Allen in the passing game of, ooh, the stats kind of aren't great, but it was okay, it was good. I mean, and they won games, but the stat line isn't awesome. You can be uber efficient and still put up stat lines. And I think they have the personnel and now the film that they can do that. And,
yes.
And it will be guys like Keon and Palmer and Shakir hitting that next stride, that next step that can push them back. I'm not saying I need Allen to throw for 5,000 yards. I'm not at all. Most of those guys that end up doing that, there's very few examples where that actually turns out that it's a great season. It's more a lot of the lines of the defense is bad and we've got to play catch up. Burrow's season from last year, he puts up a lot of numbers, but a lot of it was due to the fact of he constantly had to. But I think we can get back to Allen being a 4,000-yard passer, 34 touchdown passes.
Considering that he almost got there anyway, it was 39, 38.
Absolutely.
On the team, he had 37.
Mm-hmm.
I will say yes and no. Because what defensive coordinator in their bright mind is going to take too high off the board against Allen? What defense is going to, in their right mind, think, yeah, no, it's going to be a good idea to actually focus a little bit more on the run? That would be insane.
Well, look what the Bills had to do, though, when they're going up against guys like Derrick Henry. They have to sell out to stop the run, and so the pass opens up. Now, the Bills' defense was very good last year, and when that happened, they forced turnovers.
Defenses, though, would refuse to do that against Allen.
See, I don't know about that. I think it could happen. You don't want to just sit there and go, we'll let them kill us with the run. We'll let James Cook go off for 145 and dominate time of possession.
I hope you're right.
There will be teams, though, that have to do it because they don't have the personnel. But there will be other teams that, no, like we can stop the run. We'll let them try. We'll let Josh Palmer and Keon Coleman try to beat us through the air. And that's where they're going to have to show Keon much better in year two. And Palmer, hey, I'm not a slouch. You know, it's more towards what 2022 was, where he had almost 110 targets, he had 700 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he was coming up.
And again, I think there is no defensive coordinator in their right mind wants to focus too much on that. I hope you're right. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I want a defensive coordinator to pick an entire game plan where they're not playing too high. Have fun, go after it. I genuinely believe in that. But I also know that in the NFL, you try to do whatever you can to survive when you're facing high-octane offenses.
Right.
And that's what you have to do, especially because nickel defense is becoming more of the commonplace in the NFL in terms of base defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you can run the football, we're bigger than you. We're going to get after it.
Yeah.
And it's not to be a run-first team. It is to open everything up.
Mm-hmm.
It is to be a counterpunch. Then we can set everything else up that we want to do. Except for screens.
The
Bills are not good at those. Please
screens
stop.
Have not gone well for them
All. Please stop running screens.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Forever. Thank you. You're welcome.
I want them to be good at screens,
though. I want them to be good at it.
Because that's one of those too. It's an easy button that a lot of teams can
funny.
Just we can get
they
it going.
Have the offensive line to do it.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't work.
They can't defend them. They can't run them. That's been a thing for almost 10 years now. They just have not really been able to do it at all.
It's infuriating.
803-0550, the number two call. Sal Capaccio going to be joining us at about 10:30. To get his thoughts on practice yesterday, what he's seeing so far to start today, also some of the injury updates as well. But let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Let's go to Mike up first. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How about you?
good. Me, you guys are talking about, you know, Joe Brady and balancing out and everything. I think that we forget what actually happened last year. I mean, statistically, he ran so much on first down and put Josh in on a lot of second and long situations. There's the two games between the Chiefs and the Colts games, back to back, he ran the ball on first down 29 times, and 21 times Josh was faced with a second and long. Yes, we had some good runs last year, but he was so run heavy on first down that Josh kept on. I mean, thank God we have Josh. I mean, I just think that when you look at the actual statistics from last year, especially first down runs, how little yardage they actually gained when he's trying to balance things out. I think that we need Josh to throw the ball more and use the run as an effective alternative rather than this 50-50 complementary offense. Go back and look at the stats. It's the number of times that he was forced to running backs out of the backfield in terms of the pass catch rate and where they got the ball thrown to them. You look at Cook last year and the average spot that he received the ball on a pass was within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. I mean, how many times did we see that little swing out to the side to our running back, and it didn't do anything? I really think that Joe Brady, I'm hoping he gets a little bit more creative this year. I mean, four of the last five times we did the tush push, Josh got stopped. Three out of four, and then we still do it at in the Chiefs game at the end of the year. I think he gets a little bit.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. We get your point on that. On the tush push thing, Allen has to pick a different side. We can criticize him for that. He went to the same side every time. Now, I agree on the first down stuff, and this is where I was pushing towards the balance and the personnel. I think they can throw the ball more, where last year it was at times Allen kind of having to will them, especially in the passing game. Mac Hollins leading them in touchdown catches and such. I think they can do that more. But in the rushing attack, they were top 10 in most categories in running the ball. So it wasn't a bad idea. First down, yeah, they probably went to it too much and they put themselves in second and long situations. I think that was much more due to the passing game personnel not really giving you much.
They were also seventh in third down percentage for conversion rate, while taking, when it came to the amount of third downs they had to face, the seventh least. So they were efficient on third down. That means that you did at least a good job on first and second down, right? That's what those numbers have to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
In order to face the seventh least amount of third downs, that means you're putting yourself in a good position. You're moving the chains a lot.
Yeah.
But it also tells you that if you're the seventh best team in converting them, that you are putting yourself in a good spot or you have a fire god.
Yeah.
The Bills also, how did they do it? By run, by pass, they were sixth in terms of first downs by running the football last year. In the pass, they were 18th.
I think a lot of that was due to personnel. They did not have the personnel they trusted.
And I think that the personnel is upgraded this year.
We'll see by how much, I agree.
But I'm not going to hear the run game wasn't this good when they ran for over 2,000 yards as a team and they were sixth best in doing it with moving the chains via the run.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, the top 10 teams in terms of yards last year running the ball, it's playoff teams. It's Baltimore, Philly, Washington, Tampa, Green Bay, Detroit, Arizona, Indy, and then Buffalo. So for the most part, it's playoff teams.
Again, I hope you're right that defenses focus more on the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're going to let Allen uncork it. Have fun with that. But deep balls are not a high percentage play as in the first place. They're not.
Yeah.
It's okay, to say that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need to see like moonshots and stuff because I don't think
Allen's particularly good. It's a public service announcement. It's okay.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio coming up next from training camp. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And that is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's go now to our West Her hotline. Sal Capaccio joins us from Bills practice. And Sal, I know there was some good news injury-wise, but it appears in the last 10 or so minutes there is some not great news for the Bills' first-round pick.
Yeah, and very concerning. First-round pick cornerback Max Hairston was on the field having his right knee looked at by trainers and limped off the field with trainers. So we don't have anything on him yet. It just happened. Hopefully later today we'll have a little more on Max Hairston, but the Bills' first-round pick on the field, sitting down. It was during individual drills. I can't tell you exactly what happened. In fact, none of the media kind of saw it, right? It was over in a different area where we were kind of focusing for the most of us. I've asked around, and it was over in a different area where most people saw anything happen. So I can't tell you if it was non-contact. I can't tell you if he ran into somebody, but we'll get more information. I know you'll probably see some video of him on the ground sitting down with trainers, and then he laid down, and he was upset. And, you know, obviously that's not good news. They lifted him up and walked him to the athletic trainer's tent, and he was with a trainer when they did that.
And this is a bit of a sour note. I mean, relatively early into practice, it seemed like there was some good injury news. Dalton Kincaid, Elijah Moore, back to practice. Kincaid only misses one day, and then for this to happen, it's just it has somewhat been maybe not the biggest storyline, but one of them for the start of Bills camp. A lot of injuries to start.
Yeah, so not only you do have that good news with those guys returning, but we have more guys added to the injury report. Offensive line. I'll ask Matt Belvey. He's standing here. Did you see what happened with? Yeah, did you see? I'm live right now, Matt. Did you see what happened to him?
No. Okay. I'm seeing the video from Dan Fates at Buffalo Plus, and I'm actually walking over to speak to my colleague, Dom Tibbetts, to see if he has video of what happened. But it looks like trainers are looking at his right knee as he's getting up, and he was able to walk off on his own, which I guess is a good thing. But
well, with some help with trainers.
Yeah, but he wasn't on the cart, so that is a good thing, especially because they would always be overcautious with situations like this. So, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. And then I also just saw Cole Bishop just left practice too.
Okay, so there you go. Cole Bishop leaving practice on top of Mike Edwards not practicing, the offensive lineman, KJ Hamler not practicing, heat related. And then thank you, Matt. Larry Ogunjobi with a vet rest day. Alec Anderson has a knee injury. Dwayne Carter has an illness and not out here today. You said Elijah Moore and Dalton Kincaid have returned. They have. So we'll see anything about Max Hairston when you get a chance, and we'll find out about Cole Bishop when we get a chance.
I'd imagine it's you have to inhale probably a deep breath in order to read everything there, Sal. Yeah. But on to better things, I would imagine, I'd like to get to there. First of all, we got free Matt Beauvais on the show. Love to hear that. But secondly, reading about the one-on-ones that were happening just now, though, as well, Trey White having himself a fantastic one-on-one session. What's it been like with that competition? And is it starting to kind of, obviously, injury aside, has it been kind of skewing toward White overall throughout camp?
Yeah, I just think it's always been White until Max Hairston can prove he can be on the field and know the defense, not make mistakes, all that kind of stuff, right? So to me, you guys know, we've had discussions about this where I've always felt, you come into training camp, Tre'Davious White's your starting corner. Max Hairston has to take the job from him. And I don't even like to term it as Trey has to lose it. It's his to lose. It's Max's to win, I think. Now, obviously, the injury is going to play a role in that in some capacity here as we go forward. We hope nothing serious. But to me, Tre'Davious White always been the penciled-in starter anyway for the Buffalo Bills corner two spot opposite Christian Benford. Matt Milano just picked off Josh Allen in 11-on-11. Josh tried to float one over his head to Dalton Kincaid. Matt Milano, great job in zone coverage to pick that off. So, yeah, I think it's Tre'Davious White, by the way. He did have a great, great session. Locked down on, it was in the back of the end zone. I wrote who he was going against the first time. It was Joshua Palmer. He's going against Joshua Palmer to get to the back of the end zone. He just won't let him free. And then Josh Allen tries to fit it in. Maybe he wouldn't in a regular season game. and Trey just turns around and snatches it, grabs it, interception. And then a little while later, he's going against Keon Coleman. Coleman is right at the front part of the end zone, the goal line, and on the goal line, right around the hash marks. And mean Trey just stayed right with him, and then just nowhere to put it, and they knocks the ball away when it comes because they're trying to throw it in anyway, trying to, you know, make a play. And then, but Keon had a nice session too. I mean, that play didn't go his way, but he had a couple of real nice routes he ran, made a great catch over Dane Jackson in the back of the end zone for a toe tap at the pylon as well.
Sal, I do want to jump back too, because while he just made a play 30 seconds ago, you've been really high on Matt Milano to start camp, and he's a player. I don't want to say I've completely forgot about him, but I will say, almost like Tre'Davious White over the last few years, the Bills have somewhat learned how to play without him. And it's been good. Dorian Williams led the team in tackles, don't get me wrong. But the more I hear you talk about Matt Milano, the more I see from him at camp, I'm starting to get excited again. If maybe he doesn't ever hit that all-pro level again, but if he's even close to that, with already what you've maybe added on defense, what you have at linebacker, you know, I start to almost daydream about what it could look like.
Listen, I've said it, and I'll continue to say it. If Matt Milano stays healthy, I still think he could be one of the top weak side linebackers in the NFL. And then you're talking about Terrell Bernard, who we know that he is a really, really good football player, right? It's about staying healthy for both these guys. If they can stay on the field, they can stay available. I really believe the Buffalo Bills might have the best, if not close to it, linebacker duo in the league. And that includes a 31-year-old Matt Milano coming off a couple major injuries over the last couple of years, who started to get back into it towards the end of the year last year. I thought he was playing his best football once they got to that Denver game. You remember when he chased down Bo Nix for a sack on third down, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he was playing his best football right at that time. And then right at the end of the Ravens game, and then the Ravens game, he has that two-point conversion he knocks down. You guys remember that one, right? And then right at the end of that game, he kind of tweaked his hamstring, and he wasn't fully 100% for the Chiefs AFC Championship game. Not that it was an excuse. He did play, but he was not completely healthy for that game.
I'm calling that Chiefs dark magic at that point. But, Sal, Keon Coleman, we started the show talking about him and how he's kind of putting a little bit more consistency into the practices right now. The last 2 days, he's looked really good. You just mentioned he also still had a pretty good one-on-one session there. How's it been looking for Coleman in terms of consistency now, with a couple of really good days showing at St. John Fisher?
Yeah, I'm starting to really like what I see when it comes to that. That's where it has to be, to be honest with you, Derek, the consistency. We know he has the ability to make the flash play. We know he has the ability to, you know, make a play that most guys can't make due to his size, his athleticism, right? High pointing the ball. And he has enough speed, right? He's not super slow, despite, I know, some of the things from last year in the draft process, but he is sudden. He is quick for a guy that, you know, is his size. I mean, he's a former guard in basketball, right? He knows how to navigate around an athletic field and court. So I would say the consistency is what has to be there. And I've really liked what I've seen with him and some of the consistency that he's starting to put together here. I think today was another day where, hey, not everybody's going to go your way. But, you know, a couple of days in, we were talking about a couple of drops. I haven't seen that out here. I've seen it either he's making the play or there's a reason he didn't make the play. And I think that is something I want to see. I want to see the timing with Josh Allen. That seems to really be starting to improve, and that's all a piece of that.
With the pads staying pads going on yesterday, Sal, I'd imagine there's a lot more focus looking at the offensive and defensive lines here. Deion Walker looks even more mountainous of a person. What have you seen so far, though, in terms of the trenches? How's everything looking there? Tylan Grable probably getting a lot of the majority of snaps with Spencer Brown still out. But what's it been looking like for TJ Sanders and Deion Walker in particular?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are fitting in the rotation. And TJ Sanders did leave practice briefly yesterday. He came back, so that's good news, obviously. Deion Walker is a mammoth human being. I'm looking at him right now, standing right with the rest of the defense. He just towers over most of these guys. I mean, he's as tall as Rousseau and Epinesa, but he is also really wide and big. And you add that, you know, onto that frame, so that's pretty amazing, you know, to see that. As far as the tackle is concerned, don't count out Ryan Vandermark. He is fighting for a job out here to be the main swing tackle. With Spencer Brown out, it is opportunity for Tylan Grable. It is opportunity for Ryan Vandermark. Tylan Grable, they really liked last year after they drafted him. He comes in, he wins that swing tackle job over Ryan Vandermark, but Vandermark's still on the team and he has to play in a pinch, and he does a good job. So yeah, you want to see that. I think that's really all good sign from everything we're seeing with those guys. I'm looking right now. Is that no? It's okay. It's Mike Edwards. I wanted to see who I saw in street close game. Mike Edwards, the offensive lineman. He's out. Alec Anderson is out here though. He's just walking around, which is good news. When a guy is hurt, and he's out here with the team walking around. That's very encouraging. It doesn't mean he's coming back tomorrow necessarily or anything like that, but that's encouraging to see. Same thing with Terrell Bernard. Terrell Bernard actually was out here a little he was with trainers. He's off to the side working with trainers. He might still be, but he was a little while ago. So, you know, as much as the injury list is lengthy, let's keep some perspective that the Bills are going to take every precaution necessary with all of these guys.
Jonathan Acosta of WGRZ is tweeting out that Cole Bishop appears to be back on the sideline. So,
okay.
Sounds like good news for him. And Sal, on that,
yeah.
I did want to ask you about Bishop because I know pretty much for the most part he has been their starting safety. He may have been 100% as well along with Taylor Rapp. What have you seen from Bishop? I know this is going to be a huge year for him, and I think for a lot of Bills fans, kind of the fear is, it does Bishop have it? We really never were able to find out last year part of the reason why he was hurt for most of training camp last year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, the way I'll describe this, the same thing I've been saying, it's Cole Bishop's job. In this situation, it is Cole Bishop's job to lose.
Yeah.
How could he lose it? Well, he has to be available, number one. If he's unavailable, he could lose the job. And number two, if, you know, things just go really awry with him on the field, that could happen. I don't expect that. I think Cole Bishop's just going to keep getting better. Cole Bishop's a really smart kid. You know, played at Utah where he ran a very NFL-friendly type defense to learn all the nuances that you really have to take with you into the NFL. I really like his athleticism. I like his versatility. I think the Bills like all of that about Cole Bishop. So, no doubt, I think that Cole Bishop is a guy that can really help this team. But his number one thing is he has to be available. And it's good news that he's on the sidelines. I'm on the opposite sideline, guys, so I'm looking over there right now to see if I see him. But that's good news that Jonathan tweeted that out. You never know. Sometimes these guys just have to go to the bathroom. Sometimes they need a little water break, right? I mean, who knows what's going on? So that's a maintenance issue with their equipment. You never know. So a guy leaves the field, obviously it's notable, but for him to come back is great. And then, of course, you know, we'll keep an eye on Max Hairston as well and anything we hear about him today.
All right, sounds good. Sal, we'll let you get back to practice. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. And, of course, I do want to remind you that Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page, brought to you by Upstate Honda Dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
Hey, don't forget, though, we got a couple things going on this week in terms of some giveaways. So be listening to the station this week for your chance to win two tickets to the Buffalo Bisons home game on Saturday, August 2nd at Salem Field at 6:35, celebrating women in sports, plus a post-game drone show. That's always a good time, I'd
imagine. Shows are always
drone
a good time.
Drone show is always going to be a good time. Seeing things buzzing around there, the kids probably go, oh, well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And but you have a chance, so make sure to tune this week to win two tickets to the Bisons home game this Saturday, August 2nd.
803-0550, the number to call. We'll come back here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the North Town.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
On Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick segment here as we wrap up hour number one of the North Town Automotive Extra Point Show. We're getting real close to college football. We did mention the Hall of Fame game this Thursday, and then later in August, it's going to be college football going.
Week zero.
And that means insane college football fans saying insane things and making me howl laughing at 9 in the morning.
You were like effectively 9:30. No, this was like 2 minutes before show.
Yeah, it was.
That you read this, and you are giggling even at the thought of me reading this off.
It's still funny.
But it's still like college football is so fun, and this comment being brought up is also because it's relevant. UB plays in the MAC. And this has got to be the most unhinged sort of thing that you ever see. But also, it's respectful unhinged. I forget, like, I don't even know where this comes from, but I just see it rounding the internet right now. The account No Context College Football, so it's even better. But congrats on your 5-star recruits and $100 million facilities, SEC fans. Meanwhile, the MAC is out here playing real football in front of 14 people and a raccoon on a Tuesday night during a blizzard. You ever see a punter throw a touchdown to a long snapper while the scoreboard's on fire? Didn't think so. While y'all are busy arguing over your frat-funded dynasty, slightly less fraudulent, Toledo's cooking up a triple reverse flea flicker in a game that ends 43-42 after 6 missed PATs and a goalpost gets stolen. That's not football. That's Maction. You wouldn't survive one quarter in Ypsilanti, which is Eastern Michigan, by the way.
It's just so good. The only thing missing on this The only thing missing, and college football fans will know this, is I needed this on like one of the message boards.
Yes.
That's the only thing. Like, it's a YouTube comment. It's still funny, but if it would be perfect on the message board for like Toledo or Eastern Michigan. It's so good. Now, with that being said, that is also Maction. I mean, the scoreboard's not on fire technically, but you know.
I mean, if it's 43-42, it's on fire.
I love because
they're scoring.
That also tells you like the difference between the haves and the haves not of the same sport.
Yeah, you have defensive talent and recruits, or you don't.
Yeah.
That's kind of the difference there, yeah. But no, I think though that like you, I think it's also thanks to you. I'm getting more excited about college football season this year.
I can't wait.
And I love the idea of talking about it a little bit more. Especially when
the first college football game of the season, though, in Dublin, Ireland. Again, last year was Florida State, Georgia Tech.
Right.
Be the day of the Bills' first preseason game.
And that game, I remember, was crazy, though.
It was a great game. Florida State ultimately is horrendous. Georgia Tech's pretty good, but it was a close game. And it was fun.
But at the time, it's like, oh, my God, this really happened?
Yeah.
Florida State got toppled right away after being a threat for playing in the playoff?
Yeah. This year, it's going to be Iowa State, Kansas State. Two underrated quarterbacks, two pretty good teams in the Big 12. Both might be ranked, maybe. I don't think both, but they might be to start the season. We'll
see. Paul Hamilton's got to be excited.
Yep. Rocco Beck is their starting quarterback. They've lost both the receivers.
We're going to have to text Paul.
I'm very, very excited for that game. And I don't totally – NFL games, I've come around to being in different countries. Mm-hmm. I kind of will never get there with college football.
I think it's because college football is such an environment for college towns.
Yep.
That – It feels almost dirty to take them away from it.
I don't even like when you have the start of the year and all of a sudden like Mercedes-Benz Stadium is like hosting LSU Clemson.
Right.
They're not this year, but you get the point.
You
where
shouldn't have like
Las Vegas had USC and LSU last year. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, like if I see a college football game in Jerry Dome that isn't a playoff, I feel dirty mm-hmm. about it. Like you should be opening the season in Happy Valley. You should be opening the season out at the Rose Bowl.
One of the Death Valleys.
You have to be somewhere
mm-hmm.
that is iconic. And you need, like, where are you taking the college football gang for week one? It better be to one of the towns hosting it. Like, yeah. College town, there's nothing more pure than a game day in a college town. There's nothing more pure. Like, even Bills game days, like, I think are the ones that compete with it.
Yep, they're the ones that most resemble SEC or Big Ten game days.
Right, and like it's just one of those things where like it's a party all the time. Doesn't matter if your team is bad or good. Everyone's still going to pack the stadium. Why? Because it's their livelihood at that point. Like you're spending 4 years on a bunch of money that you're gonna have to pay off for years mm-hmm. after that. You might as well make it a time.
803-0550, the number to call. Bills rookie corner Max Harrison still has not yet returned to practice since entering the medical tent with an athletic trainer. We will keep you posted on that. Good news, though, it appears Cole Bishop only left for a few minutes. He was back on the field with his helmet on, so he seems to be all set. Harrison, though, appears to be dealing with a right knee issue. Again, we'll keep you posted on anything we learn from that. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall is back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.